Good morning. I'll let you in on a behind the scenes fact. Duct tape solves everything, and so there's now duct tape holding the microphones in place. We practiced yesterday, it wasn't here. Welcome to 2016 SEC Media Days. I think you know that after my remarks, we have time for questions. We will do that again this year. I also want you to understand the original draft of my remarks had a variety of policy conversations, those that you would probably expect. I have deleted those. I'll talk about issues of importance to the Southeastern Conference, but I've not included for conversation changes that we've made in the areas of men's basketball, football officiating, football recruiting. You may want to ask me those questions later on after my remarks. During my remarks, I want to talk about issues that, in addition to those, are critically important to the Southeastern Conference. Spent a lot of time talking about our student athletes and how they describe their reality and what they achieve. Tomorrow, Steve Shaw will explain all there is to know about collaborative replay, so I'll not jump into that. He will also talk about other football officiating matters. Also tomorrow at 12:45, Rosalind Durant from the SEC ESPN network will be here to talk about what we view as an incredibly successful year two, and I'll just cite two statistics related to that. One, the SEC network televised over 1,600 live events. That's up from right around 1,000 the first year. And that's a tribute to the work done on our campuses, which is the next statistic. We'll get lost. We have about 350 students, actually a little bit over, who are engaged in television production on our campuses. And what that means is a byproduct of the SEC network is young people, before they graduate from college and move into their chosen field, have great experience opportunities through the network. And I think that's an important piece that I want to make sure is known. But I want to talk about issues beyond the field to begin this morning. Last Monday, we as a nation celebrated Independence Day. Parades, field days, and fireworks provided gatherings that are special, that bring people together in the United States of America. Today, though, 1 week seems like a long time ago. The sadness from the past few days remains on all of our minds. And it's appropriate to make that observation up front, as it remains in our hearts as well. When tragedies occur for me personally, there's a passage in the book of Ecclesiastes, the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes, that Pete Seeger wrote into song lyrics. Became a 1965 number one hit. A musical group called The Birds. Begins to everything, there's a season, a time to laugh, a time to weep, a time to dance, a time to mourn. This is one of those times in our nation where we weep, we mourn with those families and cities who have experienced loss. But those song lyrics include another side of things, a time to love, a time for peace, a time to embrace. I'll just share, now is a time for those three things to occur. There's a speech I found from Nelson Mandela in 2000. Actually has a quote about how sports unite people. Sports, he said, has the power to change the world. That's the quote. He went on to talk and illustrate how that's true. But if you read through those remarks that were actually made at an awards dinner, at the end he says something even more important, I think. Peace is the greatest weapon mankind has to resolve even the most intractable difficulties. But to be an effective agent for peace, you have to seek not only to change the community and the world. What is more difficult is to change yourself before you seek to change others. Only those who have the courage to change themselves and to know that in all communities, without exception, there are good men and good women who want to serve those communities. It's a wise man. It's also a time to remember one of college sports' iconic figures. Because on Thursday of this week, there'll be a celebration of the life of Pat Summitt in Knoxville, Tennessee. Pat was a pillar of the Southeastern Conference. She is on par with any of the great names. In fact, may have set the standard for all of the great names that have been a part and are a part of this conference. Her impact is felt every day in the lives of the young people she mentored. Their ongoing success is living proof of Pat's influence and the truly positive impact of intercollegiate athletics. In the days since her passing, there have been any number of quotes from University of Tennessee women's basketball players talking about their mentor and their coach. Today I'll share one from Kara Lawson, who said, "Personally, she was a life changer for me. You come in as a young woman and you're rough around the edges in a lot of ways, and she, little by little, she smoothed those out and made you into something where you feel invincible as a player. And you feel invincible when you graduate with the confidence you have to attack whatever it is you choose to do." It's football media days, but it's appropriate to remember Pat, because while there's a measure of her impact in the record books, we can't lose sight of the fact that she had 100% of her players who completed their eligibility under her leadership graduate from the University of Tennessee. Last year, I introduced the idea of scholars, champions, and leaders as a vision for this conference, talking about graduating every student athlete, winning every championship, and changing the world. Pat may be the best example of having graduated every student athlete, having sought and tried and competed to win every championship, and using the intercollegiate athletics platform to change the world. Her legacy demonstrates that academics and athletics are not just compatible, but essentially linked within the context of what we do in intercollegiate athletics. From all of us, I mean all of us, I simply want to say thank you, Pat. I spent the weekend, 2 days, Friday and Saturday, with 28 student athletes from across the Southeastern Conference. And I think you're all aware that last Thursday, the five conferences known as autonomy conferences issued a joint press release talking about the continued pursuit of time balance outcomes that might be different from where we've been for the last 25 plus years. And we expect to have those ideas, those concepts in front of us legislatively as we move to the NCAA convention in January. But the opportunity this week was to build into the lives of the young people in Birmingham, but also to engage them in conversation. And I'll tell you, and I mean this, the best parts of my last 13 months have been the times that I've had to spend in conversation with student athletes, be it in groups or individually. There are some incredible young people all across this conference, literally thousands. We had a lengthy discussion about issues related to time balance in their lives. What follows are the raw quotes from our student athletes, and they gave me permission to share their thoughts with you this morning. Quote from one, "It's a 4-year commitment. We came in knowing that. Some said it's 5. We want to be here competing at the highest level. We signed up for this because we want to compete and train with the best." End of that quote. Another said, quote, "There are thousands of other people who would love to have our opportunities." End quote. Next, quote, "Our goals are set high outside of the competition arena, because we want to achieve great things, and we know what it takes to get there." End of that quote. And one more, quote, "If you want to be your best, you have to put in the work for it. We wouldn't trade these experiences and opportunities for anything. We are living out what we want to do. We only get this in the SEC." End of quote. That is what our student athletes say about their experience. Our student athletes are forward-looking people, and throughout this year, one thing that has been consistently said to me is continue and expand the support as we transition from our educational time into our career opportunities outside of sports. They have said that, they have talked about what's already done and asked for even additional support, and that's a message that I committed to them I'll carry forward through our meetings this year to see how we in the SEC office and how on our campuses we can do even more to support our young people in their transition from adolescence to adulthood and into a career. From my dialogue with our student athletes, what's abundantly clear is our 14 universities provide each student athlete with enormous support to meet the challenges present in their educational and competitive commitments. You'll meet a young man today He's an economics major at Vanderbilt University, Oren Burks. Oren shared this during our conversation, quote, "My scholarship isn't just money to play sports. It's an investment in myself. We are the future leaders of America, and there's no one else in our shoes. The skills that we're using, we need to apply them to society. We have to make a difference and pay it forward." End of his quote. In the context of my introduction, that is a leader who's not waiting years. That's a leader who's leading now. The expectations placed upon our student athletes are enormous at this level. They embrace those. And that's why we support and provide, the support we provide is so important. In fact, every one of us, leaders on campus in the Southeastern Conference, leaders of our athletics programs, our coaches and student athletes all face real pressures, demands, and expectations. We also enjoy greater attention, greater support, and in many ways, greater fulfillment as we meet the expectations placed upon us. Yet those expectations now go far beyond winning and losing, beyond ticket sales, TV ratings, and trophies. The last few months remind every one of us in college athletics that we're entrusted with the public, with leadership for what is at its heart an educational endeavor and is important in our culture. It spills out onto the fields of competition, and it does, like many other areas of life, present us ethical challenges and opportunities. We're continually attentive to the higher expectations placed upon us for integrity and in other components of our roles. And we know when we have issues, those issues are public and highly visible. But the reality is our successes far outweigh the shortcomings that may be identified. For example, if you go back to 2005 academically, when the NCAA's APR program for academic progress was first introduced, 47 SEC teams, over 20% of the teams in the Southeastern Conference were either below or very near the penalty line for the NCAA's academic performance program. Today, not one of the SEC's teams is below the NCAA's APR cut line. And in fact, none of our teams are even within 10 points of that potential penalty line. Beyond just the minimums, we have 36 teams in this conference that have perfect four-year APR scores of 1,000. In the area of rules compliance, last August, for the first time since 1984, we reached a point where no SEC university is currently on probation with the NCAA. You know, there are two athletic programs that have received a notice of allegations from the NCAA. Those notices are related to what now are known as level one or level two violations. But as we have over more than the last decade, our institutions are expected and will continue to handle these matters with integrity. We hope both of the current matters are completed in a timely manner. We understand there are issues that arise. That's why the expectation for integrity is so high. And as we move forward together, we can't have any more of those issues arise. The central thought must be, we never have a team return a championship trophy, never vacate any wins, and never have one of our teams precluded from postseason competition because we either can't follow the NCAA's rules or can't meet the expectations for academic success. We have made enormous progress. And I've appointed a working group that's been working over the last few months, led by University of Georgia President Jerry Moorhead, considering how we continue to collectively meet the NCAA's expectations and how our athletics teams continue to succeed at the highest levels while avoiding integrity compromises that challenge our entire mission. This past spring, you heard in Destin that we enacted a policy that, based on a transfer student athlete's prior conduct, may inhibit their opportunity to receive an athletic scholarship or participate and intercollegiate athletics within the Southeastern Conference. This conference has taken a national leadership position on this issue, but we still see headlines, and we recognize those headlines when young people fail to live up to their legal or moral expectations. That means we still have work to do. The same is true on every campus around this country. That means everyone in this conference, everyone must understand the high expectations for their conduct and the high level of scrutiny their conduct brings. Young people need to understand the serious consequences associated with their behaviors, and our leaders need to make certain the laws and expectations of society are unquestionably followed. As leaders, we have to hold ourselves to high standards so that we are the example for our student athletes. Now, our working group was diligent in its review and updates of our priorities and processes, and these conversations across our conference are far from over. We're committed to getting it right because there's so much good happening in the SEC and on our 14 campuses. We can't allow the actions of a very few to overshadow the great work and the great achievements being realized. There's no better example of the positive impact happening on our campuses than Dr. Isaiah Warner. Dr. Warner, earlier this year, was named the 2016 SEC Professor of the Year. He is a Boyd Professor at LSU and a professor of chemistry. Consider, before Dr. Warner arrived in Baton Rouge, LSU had graduated only 6 African-American students with PhDs in chemistry during its entire history. Today, due largely to his influence on campus and his interest in his students and the commitment of the university, that number has grown to 80, making LSU the nation's leader in graduating African-Americans with a PhD in chemistry. And he's not alone. Over the last 5 years, we've honored 70 members of our faculty, one per school each year, and 5 different professors of the year, because as universities, we have a great legacy, a legacy of excellence, a powerful and positive impact on our region, and we must continually meet the high expectations for education, for research, and for service. And there are thousands who've contributed to what we've built today and the legacy that's been established. One of those, Jeremy Foley, called me a few weeks ago, early in the, on a Monday morning, to say, I'm going to announce my retirement. He's one of the many that's made those contributions, as I noted. During his tenure at the University of Florida, earned 27 national championships in a variety of sports, including 3 in football. Jeremy has passionately led the Florida athletics program. He has set an example by having high expectations that people around him do things the right way, and he has enthusiastically supported student athletes in every sport. I want to say, Jeremy, thank you. Thank you for your leadership, for your great work. You got plenty to do in your future. But most of all, Jeremy, thank you for your friendship. One of those Florida championships during his tenure was earned by who you know as the head ball coach in 1996, Steve Spurrier. We will miss Steve's unique football genius, and you will miss the entertaining quotes he offered annually at SEC Football Media Days. To honor Steve and fill some of your column space, I spent much of the last week searching for one of his quotes that I, as commissioner, could share here today. After an extensive, lengthy, exhaustive search, I found exactly one of his quotes, not involving free shoes, astronomy, shiny cars, or the Citrus Bowl, which means I can use that one quote in front of you. Steve once said, I don't want to coach too far into my 60s. By that time, I'll be playing golf 4 or 5 times a week. Well, last week, Steve and his wife, Jerry, celebrated their 50th anniversary. He coached until he was 70, and it is my hope that both he and Jerry enjoy all the best in many, many more rounds of golf. In the season ahead, we will also say thank you and goodbye to our friend Vern Lundquist. Vern has been the voice of the SEC during some of the most exciting times in the history of our conference, and we look forward to hearing him call games through the coming season. It's fitting that Vern's final game on CBS as the voice of the SEC will be this December in the Georgia Dome, our final game, our final championship game in the Georgia Dome. In fact, it's our 25th SEC football championship game. We'll relive some memories, we'll remember great games and great people, and then we'll look forward to transitioning to the Mercedes-Benz Stadium for our 2017 game. As I said earlier, I want to talk about our student athletes. We have incredible young people. I can't say that enough. Our current projection is that 125, or actually probably higher when we get the complete numbers in, either current or former student athletes from SEC universities will participate in the Summer Olympics in Rio. It's that pride that comes from their efforts. For example, if you watched the USA Track and Field Championships last night, the trials, you watched Kendall Williams competing in the heptathlon. She ran the 800 meters, giving everything she had to earn the third spot on the Olympic team. And the pride that came from watching that. It's the same pride that comes from seeing the joy shown by Arkansas pole vaulter Lexi Weeks when she cleared her personal best to make the team. She hadn't even landed back in the pad, and she began celebrating her achievement. And then if you watched the pride and the emotion when she realized that she would be a part of the United States Olympic team. Those moments are special, and they're examples of real stories that are in our football program. Our football programs present you people today like Oren Burks from Vanderbilt, who I mentioned. He's a two-year starter, an all-SEC candidate, an honor roll student, president-elect of Vanderbilt Student Athlete Advisory Committee, and co-founder of a program called Revamp, revitalizing and empowering Vanderbilt's African-American male population. As I said, a young man not waiting to lead. He's leading now. Georgia offensive lineman Brandon Cablano is a first-generation American who's preparing for a career in commercial real estate, probably the only notary on a Division I football roster. Another first-generation American is South Carolina offensive lineman Mason Zandi, whose father fled Iran during the Revolution. Texas A&M defensive lineman Miles Garrett lives well beyond the game of football. He has an affinity like me for trying to read a book. His goal is one every 2 weeks. He writes poetry, which I do not. He left Twitter, which I have not, although I've thought about it over the last year. He refrains from social media because he said this, quote, getting better as a person, football player, and leader is how I want to spend my time, end of quote. Arkansas linebacker Brooks Ellis has a 3.8 GPA and is a pre-med student. 2 months ago, made a medical trip to Belize. Auburn offensive lineman Alex Kozan graduated in 3 years, plays this fall while earning his MBA. Ole Miss quarterback Chad Kelly has a 3.0 GPA. In the last 2 years during his spring break, he has chosen to spend that time on mission trips in Haiti. Tennessee quarterback Josh Dobbs, we've talked about him before. He leads a football team. He's an aerospace engineering major. One of the things you find is he took time to write a young fifth grade girl, encouraging her as she deals with hair loss due to a medical condition known as alopecia. Last August, kicker Austin McGinnis, receiver Alexander Montgomery, safety Marcus McWilson traveled to Ethiopia with other Kentucky student athletes, serving for an up-close look at the lives of the less fortunate, serving in prisons, providing food and renovating homes. And when I met with Kentucky student athletes, I asked them, what was your most memorable experience here at the University of Kentucky? And those that had made that trip said that was a life-changing experience for them. We have student athletes overcoming obstacles that might stop any of us in our track. Florida punter Jonathan Gould had to beat cancer before football became an opportunity. Mississippi State linebacker Richie Brown, he and his family were displaced by Hurricane Katrina. He completed his industrial technology degree this May with a 3.5 GPA, and he too will play this fall while pursuing his master's degree in business. Alabama defensive lineman Delvin Tomlinson had to overcome the loss of both parents and two knee surgeries. He's fulfilling a promise now to his mother, working on his master's degree, and he also plays the trumpet and saxophone. Missouri tight end Sean Culkin has a faith that's taken him on mission trips that included running a children's camp in Nicaragua and sharing his faith to people in El Salvador. And then there's LSU's Thorpe Award finalist, defensive back Tre'Davious White, who passed up on the NFL draft to pursue becoming the first member of his family to earn a college degree. The examples of these young men and the thousands of young men and young women in our athletics department show you that they are making the most of the opportunity they have in the Southeastern Conference. They are the lifeblood of our conference. They are why we do what we do, and we will continue to tell their stories as we keep striving to sustain the high standards of performance on the field, in the classroom, and then in the community. And this year, we'll be doing so using a phrase, it just means more. The phrase is a statement and will be part of a campaign created for us by the Richards Group, a Dallas-based agency focused on helping endear brands to people. In many ways, we are endeared to millions. But the Richards Group's dug further to determine what it is that makes our conference special, the people, traditions, and the special significance of our universities and towns, large and small. They have a great perspective on who we are. And the campaign will explain why in the SEC it just means more. Think about it for a second. To a community like Chubbtown, Georgia, a single touchdown by a certain running back means more. To be the very first college graduate from a proud family, it means more. In Appalachia, a joint research program that involves both the University of Kentucky and Texas A&M University, which is focused on developing sustainable housing for families. That research project means more. For people all across Africa, a materials science network that spans the continent, thanks to our professor of the year, LSU's Dr. Isaiah Warner. That means more. For Vanderbilt running back, study abroad trip to Australia means more. To an entire state or region where often our universities are at the very epicenter of life and culture. In fact, everywhere throughout the country or across the globe, where our alumni or student athletes call home, the colors, traditions, and the impact of a university education, it just means more. I want us all to be proud of what we do together and to continue to add to the legacy, the amazing legacy of the Southeastern Conference. I want SEC teams to win every possible championship, and I expect us to be victorious the absolutely right way. All of us who call the SEC home, our administrators, our coaches, our fans, our players, we're all contributing to something that lasts, something that matters. Can't be measured on a scoreboard. It can be measured through people's lives, through service trips to foreign lands, and families who live better because of a college education and in one changed life after another. It's realized through athletes from rural communities in the inner city who've leapt past their limitation and get to see the world and begin to realize the responsibility that comes with their opportunity. You know, when you write these things, these speeches, it's hard to figure out sometimes how to bring them to conclusion. So this year, I'm going to use the words of a young man named Nolan Gromacki. Nolan studies mechanical engineering at the University of Missouri. Happens to be a right-handed pitcher on the baseball team. Here's what Nolan shared this weekend from his perspective about being part of the SEC. Quote, "This summer, when I saw baseball players from around the country I walked into a room wearing my I Am the SEC t-shirt. I have something they all want. I compete in the greatest conference in the country. That's the end of Nolan's quote. What Nolan said is, it just means more. Thank you. Take a moment, grab a bottle of water. We've moved Kevin off to the left, so we'll have an opportunity for questions. And as I've told you before, we'll figure out if there's answers.
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll, if you have a question, please raise your hand. We have Thomas, Matt, and Tyler. Please give your name and affiliation, and we'll have time for a few questions for Commissioner Sain.
It may be the most joyous day of my year.
I think we have one over here to stage right.
There it goes.
Dwayne Rankin, Montgomery Advertiser. If you could just elaborate on what you were discussing earlier with the recent events and how that's impacted you.
Well, you know, I sat in church yesterday, which is probably the only calm moment in my week anymore. I watched a young woman who looks different from me be baptized. I heard a conversation about the realities around us, and the question asked, have you done enough, or what have you done? That becomes a difficult question, because I interact with people of all races, backgrounds, and colors, yet you're reminded that the answer is likely not. So I would offer that. Now, I lived in Dallas for 11 years, and Thursday night started watching television, particularly those events, places that I knew well, and it becomes much different, much more personal. And then the reality of the strife and the concern is one to which I don't think any of us are inattentive. And I observe we provide opportunities for a lot of people on our campuses. Sports brings people together. I think our universities do as well, and we need to be mindful and attentive to that reality and the opportunities associated with that reality.
Greg Padula, the Gainesville Sun. Can you just kind of explain to me the difference between and why it's different for a player not to be able to transfer in with something on his record in terms of domestic violence, but the schools themselves can accept freshmen to come in if they have an issue like that?
Well, I think first, Pat, I'm always cautious to people to be careful of judging one's character on 10 seconds of video. Our working group spent a lot of time dealing with that. A couple of concerns that were consistently identified, which is what can you know, what can you learn if there's something, particularly in one's juvenile past, and can you access information in a consistent way? When someone enrolls in college, they're generally an adult. You expect that you'll have access to more consistent information on which to base decisions, and so as a group said, let's go further on the transfer issue. They have been adults on a university campus, and that misbehavior is viewed as rising to a higher level of attention.
We'll go to the middle section, Commissioner, to your right.
Mike Bianchi, Orlando Sentinel. Commissioner, can you address how some schools have handled sexual assaults among their athletes? Have you addressed that with your coaches and administrators? And also, do you think colleges should do a better job of vetting the recruits that they bring on campus?
Well, Mike, to the end, I think we've raised attention certainly to the transfer issue. I do look and observe that individuals act, and it is difficult to sometimes predict the actions of individuals. Part of our basis for the transfer policy